Lord Brahma said, the mouth of the Virat Purusha, the universal form of the Lord, is the generating center of the voice, and the controlling deity is fire. His skin and six other layers are the generating centers of the Vedic hymns, and his tongue is a productive center of different foodstuffs and delicacies for offering to the demigods, the forefathers, and the general mass of people. Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadadi Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Pastachade Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaurabhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so I'd like to ask for everyone's blessings that I hear today, all of the Vaishnavas, all my seniors and guides that are assembled here today. It's my first time doing class here, sitting on this Vyasasan, so please forgive me in advance for any mistakes or any nervousness, and I pray that I can serve the Srimad Bhagavatam in some small way today. So I thought rather than reading the whole purport out, I'll just go through it in bits as I go along in the class. So I'm not sure how everybody else likes to learn, but in the way I like to learn is to understand the flow of how things go. So we're currently on Canto 2, Chapter 6, and the link to Canto 5, was the fact that the canto ended with Parikshit Maharaj asking that what is the duty of a man who's about to die, or someone who's about to die, which I feel is applicable to all of us, because at some level it's happening to us on a daily basis until we have reached the age where it is time to leave. So then this canto, step by step, tries to answer that question of what we should do on a daily basis, how to make the best use of our life. So chapter one is entitled The First Step in God Realization. And in that chapter, it mentions, Sukadeva Goswami speaks how we should regularly, on a daily basis, hear Krishna Katha and remember the Lord. Then chapter two, we hear about the Lord in the heart. So we hear about the Paramatma, or our local Paramatma, the name is Janardhan, and how we can connect with him on a daily basis and understand that he's with us always, and he's our best friend and always guiding us from within the heart. Chapter three then goes on to talk about the change in heart, how we can know whether we're progressing dependent on the symptoms we feel. Do we feel some sort of melting when we're chanting the holy names? Do we feel some attachment to hearing pastimes of the Lord? So then there must be a change of heart to know that we're actually making progress. Then chapter four talks about the process of creation, which we went, I was following the classes and went into a lot of detail. The Lord's energies and, you know, how he creates and all of that process. Then Parikshit Maharaj in chapter four, he asks many questions that please tell me how the Lord creates, maintains and destroys this universe. So we generally, the conversation was between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. But in chapter 5, Sukadeva Goswami says, well, rather than me going into it, I'll refer back to a conversation that took place between Brahma and Narad Muni. So then he starts to recite the conversation that took place between Narad Muni and Brahma, known as the Brahma-Narada Samvad, or conversation. So in chapter 5, we hear about the cause of all causes and all the different processes of creation. And then 6 questions are asked. So Narad Muni is put into a position like Arjun. So even though Narad Muni is all-knowing, he's put in that position where he acts like he doesn't really know about any of these topics, even though he's expert in it. So the 6 questions he asks, what are the symptoms of the universe? What is its shelter? How is it created? How is it conserved? What does it depend on? And what is it composed of? So a lot of these questions are answered in chapter 5, but chapter 6, especially the one that we're on now, that we're just starting today, focuses on what is it composed of. So, like I mentioned, that even Arjun, he was a pure devotee of the Lord, but he was put in this position of bewilderment where he asked Krishna all these questions. And that's how we get the Bhagavad Gita, a conversation between Arjun and Krishna. So in the same way, through these questions and answers through Narad Muni and Brahma, we get to know all the facts in truth. So we hear everything in an authentic way. And we know that Brahma is a trusted source. And, you know, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, he's our head of our Sampradaya. So it's nice to hear it directly from the head of our Sampradaya. So it's important for everyone it will increase everybody's faith to hear it directly. So this conversation happens, so non-liberated personalities can benefit from hearing this wonderful knowledge from them. And also Narad Muni is in that position where he puts himself in a position where he kind of approaches Brahma thinking that, you know, you are the Supreme Lord because you're the creator. You know, everybody in the universe is worshipping you. And he mentions, you know, like the universe is like a walnut in your grasp. So like the universe is just mundane to you because it's like you create everything. And it's so therefore it's all in your heart, in your hand, just like a walnut. And you seem so independent. You also seem self-sufficient. You seem like you create yourself, do all the creation by yourself, like a spider will, you know, make a web and then wind it back up again without any great difficulty. So, I can't see around you any other source of creation. But however, I see that you, on a daily basis, you're performing austerities. To whom do you perform these austerities and why? So you'd think that the father would be a little bit like, you know, why is my son questioning me in this way? But Narad Muni does it in a very respectful and in a very sincere and very subservient way, that Brahma actually becomes very happy. And he's actually very thankful for these questions because it gives him an opportunity to meditate upon the Lord and discuss the Lord's energies. And it's an example for all of us because as devotees, our mood should always be to take any opportunity to discuss about Krishna and his pastimes and his different energies. So like in chapter 6, Narad Muni's question is, what is the universe composed of? And that's what we're going to hear about in this chapter. So this is text 1. We're going to hear about his body, like his limbs, his eyes, ears, nose. We hear about how he's the generating center of the devatas, how he is, from him come all the ingredients of the universe. And later on, Brahma actually performs a fire sacrifice in this chapter. So spoiler alert a little bit there. So he performs a fire sacrifice, but it's just the beginning of creation. Vishnu's created everything, but now Brahma has to create all the universe, like all the planets in the universe. So he doesn't have any ingredients. You know, he hasn't got anything to make a fire out of. He hasn't got any grains to offer in the fire. He doesn't have any brahmanas. He doesn't have anything that he needs in order to do this yajna. So he gets all these ingredients from the Lord's body. And you'll hear about that later on as this chapter progresses. So the grains, the brahmanas, the gold, everything comes from the Lord's body. So the Lord is known as the cause of all causes. There is nothing in this universe that exists which isn't coming from him. So this chapter is entitled Purusha Shukta Confirmed. Okay. So Prabhupada gives this title to this particular chapter because these verses are very, very similar to the Rig Ved and the verses of the Purusha Shukta, which are common Vedic Sanskrit hymns that you'll hear in important ceremonies. So when there's like deity installation, when there's yogyas that take place, even sometimes when you're doing samskara ceremonies, you'll hear them. So they're in the Rig Veda and the Yajur Veda. And Srila Vaishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he matches up the verses in this particular chapter with the ones from the Rig Veda. Also, we always hear many questions on the Virad Roop. And at times we may think that the things mentioned in this chapter may actually be from the Virad Roop. But this purport actually confirms that the Purusha Shukta, the prayers who they're being done to, is actually Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So we've had Mahavishnu and now Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who's there in each universe. So in the purport of the Bhagavatam by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we hear how we hear about all the opulences of the Lord in His form as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So the first thing that's mentioned here is His mouth is the generating center of all kinds of voices. So any sounds that we hear in the universe today come from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So why do these come? So whenever the Lord has a desire for anything, it manifests something or it generates something. So He manifests the gross organs and the subtle sense organs at the same time, and the devatas that govern that particular sense, which we'll go into in a moment. So for example, when the Lord desires to speak, the tongue is generated. And then alongside of that, the devata that governs that speech is also generated. So that would be Agni. And then the activity of speech takes place. So it's like a very scientific process how it happens. It's not just random. It's like as soon as there's a desire, everything becomes manifest that is required for that. And the as we go through all the verses, it will explain which particular sense, who's the governing deity, and what's the subtle sense that goes with it. So this is actually the first time in this particular creation that these devatas or senses become manifest in the material world. So such thing as a voice or Agni Dev, all these personalities were not there before. So they appear from the transcendental form of the Lord. So in today's world, when we speak, this is described as like the material version of what we have today. So anything, our senses, hearing, speaking, smelling, all of these senses. And whatever we experience in the material world today is actually a perverted reflection of what exists spiritually. So what does it mean, perverted reflection? It just means what we have in the material world is fully represented in a way which we use it for our own sense gratification, for our own sense of self and our own sense of achieving anything. Whereas when it's done in the spiritual world, it's done purely in the service of the Lord. And also, when we use these particular senses in the material world, they're contaminated by the three modes of material nature, mode of ignorance, mode of passion, and mode of goodness. So how we can spiritualize it is by using each and every one of these senses in the service of the Lord. So such as smelling the flowers of the Lord, tasting prasadam of the Lord, using our vision to look at the Supreme Lord. So in this way, we can spiritualize our senses. It's not like we nullify our senses and say, okay, I've got to switch everything off because I don't want to use it for sense gratification. No, we purify it, and these senses then become spiritual when they're used in the service. So the Narada Pancharatra actually mentions this, the verses, Sarvopadi Vinirmuktam Tat Paratvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchati. So bhakti or devotional service means engaging all our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service to the Supreme, there are two side effects. One, we get freed from all material designations, and secondly, our senses are purified simply by serving the Lord. Okay, Okay, so if we go through each of the senses so we can break it down. So our ears, we can use it to hear maybe gossip or mundane topics or, you know, maybe even the daily news as to what's going on in the world. But it's changing at every moment. So we can use those same ears to hear about the Lord, and to hear the Lord's glories, to hear the holy name, to hear kirtan. Our eyes, rather than using them for mundane things, mundane beauty that we may see around, we can use it to see the beauty of the Lord, or in our service that we may do, you know, be very absorbed in our service that we do, whether it is your painting for the Lord, whether you're doing sewing, creating outfits, anything that you're doing. And our nose, we can use it to smell the Lord's offerings of prasadam, or the flowers, or even in the morning, like we, you know, we have like perfume rubbed on our wrist, which is maha from the Lord. So we can use our nose for that. Our tongue can be used for two purposes, for eating, tasting nice prasadam. And that same tongue can be used to chant and speak about the Lord rather than mundane gossip or, you know, things like that. So, I mean, earlier on in this particular canto, we hear about how if we don't use our tongue to glorify the Lord, it's described to be like the croaking of a frog. So it's like we're inviting death. Because a frog will croak easily, its predators can find it and attack it. And also, depending on, so we have our senses, you can also engage them in your respective services. So whatever your varna is, whatever your nature is, and whatever your particular ashram is, you can use it to please the Lord. This will slowly take away any material attachments that we have. And it will help us engage in service of the Lord. So in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 10, the verse is, Desham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenam mam upiyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. Because we get asked this question quite a lot. Oh, I'm at work, I don't think about the Lord all day, it doesn't seem direct service to the Lord, or I'm, you know, looking after the family, I'm doing housework, I'm, you know, all the things that we may do in our daily way, in our daily activity. So we may think, like, you know, that's not directly related to Krishna. But if you are doing your varna and your ashram, engaging those particular senses, understanding that ultimately we must either act to serve Maya, or we must act to Lord Krishna, act to serve Lord Krishna, then that actually helps us be a bit more conscious with what we're doing on a daily basis. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that this is the highest intelligence, where we've been granted this human body after 4.8 million species of life. That's it. I just can't think straight sitting up here. Thank you. So, you know, we've finally been granted this human body, and that way we can go back home, back to Godhead. So use this human life very well for that. So when we understand, when we hear this verse and we hear that originally every single thing comes from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu or the Supreme Lord, he's a generating center, then we can view everything that we use in our life for the Supreme Lord. So you can think about the item that you're most attached to, that if it was taken away from you, how much pain it might cause being separated from it. So understanding that it belongs to the Lord can make you realize, okay, well, it wasn't mine in the first place, so I don't mind sharing it, or I don't mind it being taken away from me. So this removes the contamination of the material modes and re-spiritualizes our senses. Prabhupada also emphasizes how this process is much easier when we do it through devotional service rather than through the impersonal methods of worship. So, for example, the impersonalists think that, you know, this world is Maya and it's all an illusion, and that we must, you know, kind of close down our use of our senses. So then the verse from Bhagavad Gita 12.5 is there. I'm not going to read it because I'm not familiar with the Sanskrit, but I'll speak the English. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifest, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. So Krishna is directly saying here that we must try and do it for the personal form of the Lord. in some way or another, if there is some impersonal aspect there, it just makes it very difficult, because naturally we want relationships, we want to engage in something. The mind is very active. We hear the mind is very chanchal. It needs to be engaged in something. So performing silent meditation where we're just asking the mind to shut off isn't actually possible. I don't know if anyone here has tried it, even for like 20 seconds. It's just not possible, because your mind is thinking, don't think. You know, so you just can't get to that level. So you'll always be thinking about something. So it's difficult to be an impersonalist. And why would you do that when the Lord has provided us with so much variegatedness, so much taste of different things? How can we just switch it off and say, no, I nullify everything, that it just doesn't exist? So this then allows us to develop a higher taste rather than a shutdown process or this process, mood of renunciation. It allows us to do those things for a higher taste, and we enjoy it. And then service is joyfully performed. And then the question sometimes does arise that why do people follow impersonalist philosophy? Why is that, you know, why do they not have an understanding that I've come to the temple, I see the deity form of the Lord? And you get many people like that. They'll come to the temple, they'll worship the deity, they'll be very respectful, but they still believe that the Lord is a light, or that they're going to merge into a light at the end of the day. And it's described earlier on in Canto 1 that there's three steps of God realization. So some people are on that Brahman platform where they think the Lord is a light, where they think the Lord is an energy, and they can't possibly comprehend that the Lord might have a personal form. And even when we are making progress from Brahman platform to the platform of Brahmatma, where we realize that the Lord is very personal and he's there within our heart guiding us all of the time, sometimes there can still be this mood of, well, you know, I can't see, or I can't comprehend that there could be a four-armed form of Lord Vishnu within inside my heart. So Sri Isha Upanishad mentions the verse about Hiranmayena Patrena, that even when we understand that there's a personal form of the Lord, sometimes we can't approach it, because the Lord's effulgence, the beauty and the effulgence from his body is so bright. It's like when the sun is shining, you know, sometimes when the sun is very bright, especially when you're driving and the sun's kind of shining, you can't really see, and you're like, you know, trying to cover your eyes because the sun is so blinding. So the effulgence from the Supreme Lord is so beautiful and so blinding that we can't actually go beyond that to see the Supreme Lord. So then in this particular verse, I think it's Swayambhuva Manu is praying that, please can you dim your Brahmajyoti, can you please dim the light that is coming from your body, so that I can see your beautiful face, so I can see your beautiful limbs, so I can see your beautiful lotus feet. And this isn't possible if we're thinking about the Supreme Lord as just a light. So sometimes they can't be blamed for thinking like that, because that's their level of realization. And hopefully with knowledge, with the association of devotees, with understanding and appreciating the Lord's beauty through the deity form, or through seeing beautiful pictures of the Lord, one can approach the more personal understanding of the Lord. So definitely impersonalist is a difficult way to go, because Krishna himself says, you know, those who follow the impersonal way of life is actually more troublesome to make progress. So it's much easier to purify our senses through the personal service to the Lord, to his personal forms, and through his devotees as well. Okay, so the next part of the verse talks about, so we hear about, so it's mentioned here that the Lord is a generating center of everything, and his voice. Then it's mentioned here that his skin and six other layers are the generating centers of the Vedic hymns. So what does that mean? So Prabhupada explains that Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, although he doesn't have a material form, his form is transcendental. It's made of Satchidananda, not fire, water, earth, air, like our bodies are made of. But still, he has six layers, and those layers are transcendental layers. So Garbhadakshaya Vishnu's skin and his six other layers of his bodily construction represent the seven kind of Vedic hymns that are there, that come from the Supreme Lord. For example, like the Gayatri, which is the beginning of Vedic mantras, that comes from the, which part does it come from actually? it comes from the skin of the Lord. We have another Gayatri mantra called the Ushnik, which comes from the hairs of the Lord's body. Then you've got Trishtup, which comes from the flesh. Anustup, from the veins. Jagati, from the bones. So, and then there's Bhargiti, which is a form of writing. So whenever we, you know, poetic writing that we may do in Sanskrit to glorify the Lord, that also comes from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu's body. So just all the different layers that he's got of his skin, down to the root, comes from Krishna. Comes from the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And we also hear in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, out of all the poetry, I am the Gayatri. Okay, so I'm actually finished. So let me see if there's anything here in the purport we can talk about. Okay, so let's hear a little bit more about the Lord's body. So originally, since all the senses are produced of the Lord's reservoir of senses, the sensual activities of the material world are to be purified by the process of devotional service. And thus the perfection of life can be attained simply by purifying the present position of our material activities. And the purifying process begins from the stage of being liberated from the conception of different designations. So that means, my understanding of that is that, you know, looking beyond the body, I'm neither female, I'm neither male or human, or like in terms of that level. So we become purified that, and we walk around understanding that actually I'm a spirit soul. So we hear this all the time. It's the basis of the philosophy, that, you know, I'm a spirit soul, I'm not this body. But still we can be so absorbed in our activities of the body where we may not think about the Supreme Lord, that even knowing that philosophy, it's not actually realized knowledge. We still think that we're the mind. We still think that we're the thoughts that come through our mind. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai, Shri Shri Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gauranitai ki jai. And actually, even though this is the basis of our philosophy, I only actually understood this over the last couple of years, that we're also not our mind. So the thoughts that come in our mind that are passing through all the time, to understand that these are just passing thoughts, that's not actually us, it's not coming from the soul. And even sometimes we might have feelings of maybe envy or anger or hatred. There may be thoughts in our mind and we're not happy with the thoughts that are coming because we don't want to view the world like that, or we don't want to view the devotees in that way. So it can be a little bit, you know, why am I thinking like this? And we may feel like we're a bad person thinking this way. But if we fully understand that actually our mind and the thoughts that go through our mind, it's not us, because we're spirit soul. So the mind, the thoughts in the mind are, you know, like subtle things that are going through. And if you can step back and detach yourself and think, that's not real intelligence. Real intelligence is anything that's spiritual. It's, you know, understanding the scriptures. It's understanding the holy name. It's serving the devotees. That is what is real. The thoughts are not real. So if you can detach yourself from that, you can move away from the thoughts that, you know, oh, you know, that wasn't so great what I was thinking. And even when pride creeps up, when you start thinking, oh, you know, maybe I'm good at this or I'm good at that, that is just thoughts going through your mind. That is not you. So understanding that I'm not this body on a deeper level. Okay. The attachments of the material affinity may be simply changed to the service of the Lord. Thus, the treatment of being freed from material attachment begins automatically. Right, and also another thing as well is that when you are going through spiritual life, sometimes you may feel anartas cropping up in your heart, and you may be faced with something, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you start focusing on it. For example, if you have the anartha of being envious, you know, we don't look at it as work in progress. Okay, I'm going to work on my envy. You know, I'm so envious at the moment. That is what I'm going to work on. We simply chant the holy name, serve the devotees, read the scripture, read and study the scriptures, and gradually those anarthas will be peeled off. And often we get the question as well that, you know, oh, I've been around for 10, 15 years. I used to be angry then, but I'm angry still. That means I haven't made any progress. but to also understand that these anarthas are there in layers. So although we don't eat onions, we can still use the onion analogy, right? That an onion has many layers to it. You take off one layer and there's still another layer there. So you may have taken one layer of anger off, but as you go deeper and deeper into your spiritual life, you take more and more layers off. So originally it might be gross, right? So your anger may manifest externally. You know, you may, you know, punch the air or do a few things, kick a few cabinets, whatever, you know, whoever's been watching the mundane Johnny Depp trial. You know, when you get angry, you express it in different ways. And even in the Bhagavatam, it's discussed that anger is manifest like, you know, the holding of a punch or the kicking of the leg or trembling. These are physical attributes of being angry. So this is anger being manifested on a gross level. But once you start peeling that layer off, that gross level may go away. So from the outward look, it may not seem that you're angry, but the anger is here in the mind. It's expressed as a mind, but you may not show it externally. So gradually, as you're progressing, then you start dealing with the anger, which is within you, a more subtle type of anger rather than the gross. And then once you work on that layer, then, you know, you go deeper and deeper, and that's how it happens. So when one is going through life and you're going through the process of being cleansed, this material cleansing of the material attachment happens automatically. You don't have to be, okay, I'm going to work on these anarthas. We don't need to worry about that. We let the Lord take care of that, and we ourselves just focus on the process. So again, it's mentioned, the process of liberation is therefore easier through devotional service than by any other methods. For in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, one is subjected to various kind of tribulations if one is impersonally attached. Okay, so maybe we'll take some questions or corrections or any additions or realizations that anyone may have on this. Yes, bro.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for your class. I had a question. So obviously Prabhupada was saying in the purport here that you know, material activities are tinged with the modes of material nature. And in other purports, it says, for so long as you have a material body, you know, the modes of material nature will have influence over you. But devotional service is beyond the modes of material nature. So my question is, for us in the beginning stages of bhakti, we are not yet on a platform of devotional service where we're beyond the modes, but we're still influenced by the modes. So are we really practicing bhakti just yet? Or is this process up until then, when we become fully beyond the modes, when we start practicing devotional service? Is all this time till we get to that stage just us, like purifying our vision or purifying our consciousness in order to be beyond it, then we can practice? Or is it that still while we're attempting to practice devotional service, there is some element of bhakti that's adding up there that's beyond the modes, even though we're still in these bodies?
Sure. That's a brilliant question. I'll try my best to answer. And if anybody wants to add anything afterwards, please do. So my understanding is that we're constantly surrounded by the modes. The modes are in the atmosphere. In the same way, like, we can't escape from the rain. When it's outside and we're in the rain, it's surrounding us. There's no shelter from it. So the modes are constantly around us. And we have to work within that atmosphere constantly because we're in the material world. And because we're very much on the bodily platform, the modes will be there. But the idea is that we elevate ourselves through the modes. So there's an entire chapter there's two chapters in the Bhagavad Gita that talk about the modes of material nature. So we kind of, you know, you may analyze yourself. You can do, there's these quizzes that are available where, you know, you answer all the questions and you can work out how much you're in the mode of what. But generally the mode, it changes on a daily basis, morning, even, you know, lunch and evening. The modes will change throughout the day. Your modes that you're in will change throughout the day. But the idea is that generally we elevate ourselves through the modes. So, for example, you might be in the mode of ignorance in the way in which you do something. So find out what the mode of passion is to do that same activity. So you may be, your devotional service still counts because it's an action that you're performing to the Supreme Lord, but it's just not pure. So you do the action in the mode of ignorance. you read up and you find out, okay, how can I do this action in the mode of passion? Because it's very difficult to move from the mode of ignorance to the mode of goodness. It's hard to make that jump. So then you do that activity in the mode of passion, and then gradually, you know, you can move into the mode of goodness. And ultimately, Prabhupada mentions time and time again throughout the entire Srimad Bhagavatam that we must try and come to the mode of goodness. That's not our goal. The goal is to become on the pure, you know, on the pure platform. But as much as possible, if we can be in the mode of goodness, then that gives us a great opportunity to be in Shuddha Sattva, in pure goodness, which is beyond the modes. So, yeah, our activities still count. All the devotional service still counts towards the Supreme Lord, because the Lord looks at the sincerity with which we do something. And the more sincere we do it, the more the Lord guides us from within the heart of how to work through these modes. But it changes throughout the day. You might wake up in the mode of, well, you might wake up in transcendence, especially if you're here at the manor. You know, you're hearing everyone getting up and showering. So it's like you wake up and you're like, right, Jay, Hari Bol, let's go to Mangalarti. But, you know, if you're at home, or, you know, you've had a late night and the alarm goes off, you're definitely not in the mode of goodness or passion. It's more like ignorance. It's like you throw your duvet back over your face and you're like, no, you know, I'm just going to go back to sleep. So how to get out the mode? So how to get out of that mode? So one good example is, although it's good to listen to bhajan first thing in the morning, because you're so deeply in the mode of ignorance, it's so impossible to relate to the holy name or any bhajan that you might put on. So you might want to put some music on which is more passionate, or maybe put on a kirtan which is more hyped up and more passionate to draw you out of the mode of ignorance into the mode of passion. And then gradually, when you're in the mode of passion, you're like, okay, I can listen to Govinda Madhipurusham now, you know. So it's gradual elevation. So it's just about being aware on a daily basis that regarding what habit is in what mode. So am I sleeping in the mode of ignorance? So I mean, I didn't even know that was a thing until I heard my Guru Maharaj do a class that you can sleep in the mode of ignorance. So if you're sleeping on your front, that's actually the mode of ignorance. It's a lot harder to get up in the morning if you're in that position. So sleeping on your front and sleeping on your right-hand side is considered to be the mode of ignorance. Sleeping on your left and on your back, I think, are considered mode of goodness. I mean, don't quote me on that. You can have a look. So just understanding what you're doing in your life, what mode you're doing it in, and then just improve on that. But it still all counts. It's still devotional service. And actually, from the last chapter that we did, chapter 5, it actually goes through the process of how this universe is created. So you hear that the first thing that Brahma does is create ignorance. Because if we have to survive in this material world, we can't actually survive here if we've still got that spiritual consciousness from the spiritual world. So if we decide, I want to enjoy separately from the Lord, I want to be in the material world, our consciousness needs to be, for want of use of a better term, is dumbed down a little bit in order to even survive in this material world. So the first thing he does is he creates five different types of ignorances. So the first one is like thinking that you're this body and that you're this mind. And there's many others which are all listed in the previous chapter. So we have to break out of that. So we have to do the reverse effect. Because it's strange, because we're always hearing about, oh, you know, we're in the modes and you have to work your way through the modes. But when you hear about creation, you hear it the opposite way, how it is actually created in the first place. And then from those five levels of ignorance, then you go in the mode of ignorance, passion and goodness, you know, and how everything is divided by that. So technically, when we're in the material body, everything in our life is tinged by the modes or tinged by ignorance, even our intelligence. It's only pure intelligence when it's devotional knowledge. So that's a very long answer to your question. But if anybody wants to add anything to that, it'd be appreciated, or any corrections.
I think you should reverse Sarvapadi. But really, you've got to look into that verse, okay? Because unless we meditate on that verse, we won't get it. Otherwise, it's just an analysis. If we use all our senses in the service of the Lord, they become purified. That's good. But what is the service of the Lord? And it's what you're doing now, wherever you are. That's the service of the Lord. He's given you that to do. And that's a special moment, because Radhanath Swami always, he spoke in this way. What wonderful thing. What is the most wonderful thing? Thing, usually whatever we do every day, and that should be done as an act of worship. Not, and if we do that, then it says there's some there are engaging your
probably
they
you
become
put
purified.
The mic by, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And purified. They're. And by being engaged in the service of the Lord as an employment. That's your employment every day. All your duties, whatever you got, he gave it to you. It's that. Nothing that we're not doing, it doesn't come from Krishna already. It's our duty. God, you don't have to think about it, worry about it, but you just do them as an act of worship. And I think that's the main thing that I can think of. Really, yoga then, you know, if you can understand, it's like, it's a nice meditation. Okay.
Thank you. To do every act in the service of the Lord. Beautiful, thank you. I think there's a Mataji here.
You were talking about anattas and being envious, you know. I was wondering, is there any value in kind of working through issues like that? I mean, do we just kind of ignore it and just chant Hare Krishna, or is there any value in actually working through kind of issues and psychological problems? Is there some kind of balance there? Could you shed any light on that?
So the anarthas, I mean, psychological problems is one thing, but in terms of your anarthas that are coming out, you should be conscious of them. You should be aware that, you know, which are the anarthas that are coming through you, but not so much, like, sometimes it can pervade people's consciousness completely, like, where they become anartha conscious rather than Krishna conscious. So it's just to be aware that this is something that I'm going through, this is something that you kind of acknowledge those feelings that are popping up. And then you ask for Krishna to kind of get rid of them, or, you know, work through them for you. So, I mean, it's not something we can do. That purification happens through the Supreme Lord. So be aware, acknowledge that, oh, this anartha is popping up in my heart. Then you ask the Lord to work through it in that way. But in terms of psychological problems, definitely, like, I would say, you know, seek professional help on that and work through it, because it's sometimes even very hard to practice devotional life if you are going through psychological issues, because you're constantly, you know, you're absorbed in your mind, and it's hard to break through anything to do with the mind unless you can get help for it. So that's what I'd recommend. Yeah. And nowadays it's not even a taboo topic, because we're becoming more and more aware of, you know, the state of our mind and understanding that we need to do something about it rather than ignore it. Yeah. So one good way of working through your anarthas that I would recommend is the Srimad Bhagavatam is a gem for that. So any particular anartha that you're going through, there's like certain chapters that you can read and you can meditate and you can study on, and you'll find that something that may have taken you a few years to work through will probably disappear within a week or two, just simply by meditating on that particular chapter and reading through that chapter. And if you haven't experienced that before, I'd say definitely give it a try. For example, if anger is an issue, read through the Shiva and Daksha pastimes. You know, you hear how Daksha becomes angry and, you know, the followers start cursing and counter-cursing each other. But if you read that chapter regularly and you study it, you'll find that automatically certain things disappear from within your heart. And same with envy. If you hear about the Dhruva Maharaj pastime, you know, how Suruchi's envious and, you know, how they treat Dhruva and how Dhruva feels about it. And he's burning with anger and he's burning with this mood of envy that how come my brother gets to sit on my dad's lap but I don't. Then that can help you work through things. You don't need to work through it. You just read the chapter and poof, like Krishna just makes it disappear. So, thank you. I think, was there a question here on the Mataji side? No. Okay, so I think we can finish for today. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.